That huge pile of petroleum coke lying alongside the Detroit River in southwest Detroit is triggering a growing sense of alarm. You may recall we spoke with New York Times journalist Ian Austin here on Stateside about the origins of this mountain of pet coke that's growing in the southwest Detroit area, a byproduct of tar sands oil refining used in energy production. When mixed with coal, it can be used as low-cost fuel. The piles are being brought in by trucks from the Marathon Petroleum Refinery in southwest Detroit, and the pet coke is being stored by a company called Detroit Bulk Storage. They are storing it for the owner of the pet coke, Coke Carbon. That's K-O-C-H. U.S. Congressmen John Conyers and Gary Peters and others have been voicing growing concern about the health and environmental risks of storing these piles of pet coke. Joining us to talk more about that is Nick Schroek, a professor of law at Wayne State University in Detroit. Nick's also the executive director of the Great Lakes Environmental Law Center. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you.
Well, the EPA has said open storage of pet coke does not pose a health or environmental risk. To that, you say?
Well, we just don't have enough information. The studies the EPA are relying on really look at some very specific instances of dust blowing off of pet coke piles, and they looked at exposure to laboratory rats and also to primates. This is back several years ago, but we really haven't seen any actual on-site monitoring to see what potential health impacts there might be to humans. So we know a little bit about what's actually inside a lump of this pet coke, but we don't really know what those long-term health implications might be.
And what is inside that lump?
Well, there's a bunch of stuff. It's very high in carbon content, but it also has some heavy metals. So things like vanadium, selenium, chromium, chlorine, all that good stuff that we normally don't want just out in an open-air storage environment.
And when you think of the neighbors and the families in southwest Detroit,
right,
what would you think if you were living downwind or near that pile?
Well, first of all, it is just, it's a nuisance. It creates dust. There's a film that people are finding on their balconies and in their driveways and in their buildings as they're going to and from work. There's several baseball fields and soccer fields in the area where kids are actually out there playing where this dust is blowing around. So first of all, it's just a nuisance. It's obnoxious. It's something you have to deal with. But beyond that, you wonder about what those health implications might be. And remember, this is a community in southwest Detroit that's already overburdened with pollution. There's steel refining going on there, electricity generation from coal plants, all sorts of heavy industry that's already creating poor air quality and a tough environment to grow up in. And now we're just kind of placing these pet coke piles right on top of that community.
And has anyone been able to really determine what will be happening to those piles?
As far as we know, they're going to be there for the foreseeable future. Because what's happening is Marathon, as you said, is trucking in the refined petroleum coke each day,
right,
and they're dropping it off there into these piles, and then ships are coming in into the Detroit River, and they're taking that petroleum coke off to destinations unknown. Could be somewhere domestically, but in all likelihood, it's going to the international ports internationally where it's being sold to China and India and other places where they're using it for fuel as part of, you know, co-firing with coal plants or perhaps in some other industrial processes.
And the fact that nations elsewhere could be using it for fuel, talk about the concerns that raises in terms of our air quality, something beyond the aesthetics and the ugliness of that mountain.
Sure. So here in the United States and in North America, we have pretty good standards in place. They could always be better, of course, but pretty good standards for certain criteria pollutants and things that we worry about getting into the air. So think things like mercury and other toxics that get into the air, and also things like global warming, greenhouse gases like carbon. And so the thing is, in other countries, other parts of the world, they don't have the same type of standards. So when they burn this pet coke, which is a dirty fuel, all of that stuff gets up into the atmosphere and eventually makes its way back here into North America and, of course, all around the globe. In fact, a lot of the mercury contamination that we deal with in the Great Lakes, which is why we have fish consumption advisories and that type of thing, a lot of that mercury is coming from the developing world because they don't have those pollution controls in place.
So there's this kind of chain of events that goes above and beyond the fact that there's this big dumping of pet coke alongside the river.
Absolutely. We're concerned about the, like we've talked about the dust, also the potential for runoff. So that dust, when it gets captured by rainwater and runs off into the river potentially or into storm drains where the trucks are coming in on the streets, and that material then gets into the water, and that's where we really don't know what those implications could be for water quality and also for the health of fish populations, which then, of course, people catch and eat. So, again, we kind of wonder about what those long-term health impacts might be.
I'm speaking with Nick Schroek, who's a professor of law at Wayne State University and the executive director of the Great Lakes Environmental Law Center, talking about that mountain of what we've come to know as Pet Coke. It sounds like a kind of a cute name. It's anything but when you hear this Pet Coke name. And this pile is, we know, on the radar screens of congressmen like John Conyers and Gary Peters. And they've been sending out letters asking various agencies like the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality to investigate whether the company storing the Pet Coke for Coke Carbon is within state regulations. What's your sense? Are the regulations being followed, and are they sufficient?
Well, I'll take the second part first. They're woefully inadequate. That we really do not have regulations in place dealing with the storage of petroleum coke. In particular, in an open area environment alongside a water body, a major river, there aren't enough standards in place to make sure that we're protecting the environment. So first of all, we need to look at a permitting process at the state level where our Department of Environmental Quality would have some sort of standards by which they would judge whether or not a particular location is good for storing this type of material. Right now, we just don't have that. In fact, these piles started appearing along the river, and the company storing them there didn't even bother to get a open-air storage permit for bulk material. So things like, you know, gravel or sand that you would store that could be blown around, those need a very basic permit, which was not even applied for these petroleum coke piles. So now they're actually going forward with that process, but we're also concerned about stormwater, as we discussed previously. I mean, what happens when this material runs off a property and into the water? And those are the kind of things that could be addressed in a state permitting process. It's just that right now we really don't have one. And that's something that legislation that's been introduced by State Representative Rashida Tlaib is looking at, kind of overhauling our state permitting process. And at the federal level, again, we really don't have much to go on as far as environmental protection from storage of petroleum coke. And that's where Congressman Peters is first calling for studies about potential health and environmental impacts from the storage of pet coke. And then from that, hopefully, we would get some regulations dealing with nationally how we store this material. Because it's important to remember that while we're focused on Detroit and these unsightly piles right along the Detroit River, other refineries like in Whiting, Indiana, other places around the Midwest, and all across the country are going to be refining this heavy tar sands oil from Canada for years to come, and we have to deal with this byproduct, which is the petroleum coke.
So this is the tip of the iceberg, or it's the beginning of what's going to be a very significant challenge environmentally that I'm hearing you say.
Absolutely. And in fact, the Marathon refinery isn't even up to full capacity as far as how much petroleum coke they'll be able to process. There's a oil pipeline that's being expanded. It's a company that you may remember, Enbridge, that had that oil spill in the Kalamazoo River. They're expanding their pipeline, and so eventually we could have maybe two or three times as much petroleum being processed at that facility, and that, of course, means additional pet coke that we're going to have to deal with.
The people who run Coke Carbon and the people who are the executives of Detroit Bulk Storage, they aren't the ones that are living next to this pile of pet coke.
Right. What it comes down to is that it's a poor community. It's an industrial area, and that's where a lot of these types of environmental harms, unfortunately, are visited upon populations. People with access and influence are generally able to keep that stuff out of their community. And that actually brings up a larger point. It's not just the people living there. This is also the Detroit riverfront.
Yes.
We've spent millions of dollars and, you know, public and private money trying to get people down to that riverfront. We have a beautiful riverwalk now where folks can go and recreate, they can fish and do all these things. And then right at the end of that riverwalk, we have these piles of petroleum coke. It's really not, it's kind of our doormat to the world or front door to the world. It's really not the type of image and the thing that we want to portray to people when they come to Detroit.
Okay, so we have talked about the environmental concerns that have been raised by this pet coke pile. Is there any kind of immediate remedy in sight?
Well, the city of Detroit is looking at some zoning changes, and they're looking at the way that this material is handled on site. And I will give some credit to the operators, Detroit Bulk Storage. They have changed some of their management steps to try and keep the dust down. They're actually spraying the dust with some type of chemical, which we would love to know what it is that they're actually spraying on these piles to try and keep the dust down. So they're making some progress there. But the city of Detroit's looking at some changes to the zoning ordinances that allowed these piles to be there in the first place. They're also looking at potential permitting for environmental and public health implications. So there is some action going on at the city level. Again, we really need a lot more state-level authority to deal with permitting these pet coke storage sites around the entire state, because right now in the open environment, it's really not the ideal situation. At a minimum, it should be covered, and we'd hope that it would be contained so that you wouldn't have that type of runoff potential to go into our lakes and rivers. And the final point I would make is that I know there's people that are actually looking at addressing this problem. The city of Detroit, the city council has asked their law department to look at perhaps getting an injunction to stop this petroleum coke from being stored along the riverfront. There's also private parties that are looking at like a nuisance action to try and deal with the dust and odor and noise that's caused by the pet coke storage. And then I think we may also see some potential claims for environmental harms for the unpermitted discharge of this polluted dust into the Detroit River.
Nick Schroeck, a professor of law at Wayne State University, and he's the executive director of the Great Lakes Environmental Law Center. Thank you for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you.